Welcome to the Crude Life Podcast, because when you're making money, sometimes life can just be crude. Hey folks, my name is Jason Spies. I'm an award-winning multimedia journalist and talk show host. And on today's episode, we talk with Justin Kringstedt, director for the North Dakota Pipeline Authority, about refracking out in the Bakken. He gives us an update from the Western Dakota Energy Association annual meeting as he moderated a panel, as well as gave a presentation. And we also discuss in the interview whether North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum's challenge to the oil industry is a realistic goal or not. 2 million barrels a day, zero spills, coal collaboration, as well as a few other visions from the governor of North Dakota, Doug Burgum. Justin Kringstedt comments on those challenges and goals put out by the North Dakota governor. All that plus much more on today's episode of the Crude Life Interview with Justin Kringstedt. My name is Jason Spies. I'm your host, and I'd like to take a quick moment to say thank you to our sponsors. And if you haven't thanked our sponsors or done business with our sponsors, go ahead to our website, The Crude Life, click on the sponsors link, and take a look and see if there's anybody there that you could do business with or thank them, because they keep interviews like this free here on the Crude Life Media Network. Over the past few months, I've told you about how unbelievable Hatch coaching is. Well, don't just take my word for it. Listen to what Greg Tavine of Emerging Prairies has to say about Hatch coaching.
When I think of the world that I want to live in, it's with people that care, that take risks, that reinvent themselves, reinvent their organizations, reinvent their industries. And Eric's a model citizen for that. He's trying to solve problems. He's trying to bring people into those solutions. He does incredibly well, but he lives generously. I think a community filled with people like Eric that are solving problems, giving it their best, and creating an environment for others to lead and soar and succeed, that's the place I want to live. And so Eric's the type of person that's in my community, and I'm really grateful for that.
To find out more about Hatch Coaching or to have Eric Hatch speak at your event or company, visit hatchcoaching.com. That's hatchcoaching.com. Or call 701-212-1572. That's 701-212-1572. Joined today, of course, with Justin Kringstedt, as he just said, with the Pipeline Authority, bringing him in for a couple reasons. One, to talk a little bit about the Western Dakota Energy Association annual meeting, which he played a part in, but then also transition into some pipeline talk. And I also want to ask him about something that the governor has been talking about too. He's got four goals he'd like to see the oil industry strive for, and just trying to see what the reality is behind something like that. Justin Kringstedt, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on the program.
Yeah, thanks for joining us today. And in addition to your normal role, of course, you like to step out and be a part of these annual meetings. I love annual meetings because it kind of summarizes everything. And the nice thing about oil and gas is they work far ahead, so that, you know, you think ahead and then you got time to react and a number of different things. So the annual meetings are really important. So appreciate you coming on to help share some of that information out to the masses, the 30 some radio stations that we're on with this program. So let's start off by talking about what was your role at the annual meeting?
Yeah, so this morning at the event, I gave a small presentation and then moderated a panel on Bakken refracs and Bakken optimization. There was several other engineers present on the panel. There was Jeff Parker from Marathon Oil, Charles Olson from Whiting Petroleum, and Charles Gorecki from the Energy and Environmental Research Center. And the two industry partners, Marathon and Whiting, were both given industry perspective what their companies have been active doing in North Dakota as far as refracs. And then Charles Gorecki with the EERC highlighted some of the programs they have currently underway as far as research and pilot testing and various programs that are in place in order to maximize the production out of North Dakota's resource.
Now, my understanding is, and I could be wrong on this, is that the refrac has advanced or developed to a portion or to a tune to where it seemed to be a very good supplement for the energy companies when the oil price has been below $50, $60, kind of that get outside of the hot zone of the Bakken. How much of that statement is right?
Well, so Bakken refracs, it's one option available to the producers in North Dakota. And so just like anything else, the refracs are in competition with either completing a previously drilled but uncompleted well, that capital's in competition with just drilling and completing a traditional horizontal Bakken well at the same capital's in competition with other plays around the U.S. And so the companies, they've got a lot on their plate as far as trying to figure out where it's most appropriate to use and what the timing and each application is very unique. And again, just like a normal Bakken well, you know, there is no cookie cutter. You know, each one of these refracts that gets completed is a little bit unique. The performance of the well, the technique and the style that was used to refrack it is unique. And so there's still a pretty significant amount of learning that the companies are doing, trying to figure out exactly, you know, what is the right combination of steps to make these refracts the most viable option out there for some of these older wells. And so, you know, really where we're at currently as far as refracts in the Bakken, if we look back at the early days of Bakken development, the 2008 to say 2010 time frame, when the industry was utilizing what we now see as pretty basic types of completion techniques, there was just open hole laterals. They would drill the 2 miles horizontally. They would not do any type of stage separation. They would just pump down, comparatively to today, relatively low volumes of fluid, low volumes of proppant. And it did not effectively hydraulically fracture that full 2 mile lateral. And so companies now, the first phase of the refracts in North Dakota, are the companies looking at their inventory of wells from the earlier days of development and saying, okay, which wells should be our first targets, because we know the original completion just wasn't adequate to bring the volumes of production that we would like to see out of that resource. And so they're going back to those single-stage fracs, and now they're using more modern technology, the multi-stage fracs, the higher fluid, the higher proppant volumes, in order to give a new life with newer technology to those older wells. And so that's really where we're at today. Going forward, the companies now are looking at, okay, what about the next generation of Bakken wells, the ones that had, say, 20-stage fracs, but still not at the level of understanding the performance that we're getting today. And, you know, that's really where we're at from an R&D side. Industry is looking at, you know, it's pretty clear that the older wells can be refracked successfully. Now, can some of the more modern wells be readdressed and refracked in an economic fashion? That's really the next big question for the industry.
So I had a couple questions stemming off that, and the first one, I guess I'll go into the cost part of it, which is where you kind of left off, is you mentioned science project or something along those lines. What I wrote down is efficient, break-even, or science project. Have they gotten, I know you said cookie cutter, or I'm sorry, each one is kind of specific, and there's no cookie cutter on this. As an overall refrac procedure, are they still in that science project where it's costing them money? Have they gotten to the break-even point? Are they becoming efficient to where they're actually, you know, seeing some good dollars profited? Is there a trend happening within the refracs right now?
Right now, I would say that the industry, when they're targeting those older first-generation Bakken wells, those in today's price environment are economic. They are making those work from a commercial standpoint. So, as I noted, that's really what we're going to see over these next several years, is the industry really looking at working off some of those older wells in their inventory and looking at those for refract potentials 5 years from now, 10 years from now. As the technology, as the knowledge base grows, then we may start looking at some of those more modern Bakken wells and what may be done with those. But again, from a cost perspective, again, I just had this conversation on one of the sidebars with some of the industry folks. You know, there really is a very wide range for what a refrac cost. It depends on what techniques are used, what type of prep work and downhole reworks that need to be completed. But anywhere from, you know, as simple as a $1 to $2 million job up to higher than $4 million. And so, again, if you're going to be spending $3 or $4 million, you're going to need significantly more oil produced from that refrac than you would, say, with a $1 or $2 million, a little bit more simple approach to that refrac. So, again, still a lot to be learned from everyone involved on how this could be used and applied most appropriately in North Dakota.
And the second question I had based on that, by the way, Justin Kringstead, North Dakota Pipeline Authority, you mentioned second phase, that sort of thing. Do they have, is there a set number of phases for these refracs, or is each well a different number of phases?
Well, so again, just looking back now around 10 years of modern Bakken development, the industry has changed so widely. It was some year by year, new technology advancements, new techniques that the industry was using to complete these wells. And so as we move forward in time, the industry is going to continue to look at all of the various techniques that were used throughout the early development of the Bakken and try to figure out, you know, what opportunities may still lie within those wells where there's resource still in the ground that with our modern knowledge base and our modern techniques and styles, can we reaccess some of those reserves that ultimately would be left in the ground if not readdressed.
Okay, I see. It's more of a kind of a 2.0. It's more of a technology phase as opposed to, you know, this is the first phase, this is the second phase, this is the third phase. And so am I hearing the phases right then?
Correct, yeah. And so, again, we're still relatively young in understanding how refracs can play out in the Bakken. And if you and I, if we have this conversation again 5 years from now, we'll vastly have a much broader sense of how this is going to continue to move forward.
You know, I do forget that, you know, several years ago, we were talking when the Bakken was, you know, $100 oil, that sort of thing. Kind of the talk of the time was, you know, we're only accessing 10%, 7%, 12% of the Bakken. So as technology advances, you know, you're going to have more opportunities to go back in and take the oil out. And that's what we're talking about here, the refrac and these different phases. So, I mean, we could have five different phases of the Bakken, couldn't we?
Exactly. And so that's Charles Gorecki with the EERC, the last phase of this morning's panel that I participated in. That was really his focus is, again, we understand that the Bakken, the resource in the ground is enormous. And when we're only receiving 8 to 12% of the oil using today's technology, his office, his group, is working with those industry partners to figure out, okay, how do we get to 15%? How do we get to 20%? And so he was highlighting some of the pilot programs they have coming up where they're looking at using dense phase gas as an EOR opportunity. There's some pilot projects coming up in the coming months. There's some permitting just got completed by Liberty here in North Dakota. And so folks are definitely not slowing down the technology curve. They're moving forward as quickly as they can to figure out, you know, again, how do we move from 8 to 12% up to 15 to 20%? And can we even go above and beyond that? Time will tell. And it's really right now, it's not restricted by the geology and the resource in the ground. It's restricted currently by our ability to develop the technologies to get it out. And so anyone that follows any technology, you know that as time goes on, people get smarter, they get better, and I would expect the same thing to take place with this resource.
You know, every now and then I get people that come up to me and they'll say, you know, why are you still doing the energy programs, that sort of thing? And I almost feel not sorry for them, but I just kind of take a step back and say, you know, I wish you understood the way it worked out there, because the energy industry creates so many jobs. And, you know, even when they're part of a downturn in low oil prices, we're still pumping out 1 million barrels a day. And they're still creating new jobs, whether it be in the R&D sector or carbon capture sector or, you know, what we're talking about is this refrac technology side of things. So they're constantly reinventing themselves within the industry in order to continually create jobs and good paying jobs at that too. And one of the ways that they do is with new infrastructure and repairing other infrastructure. And since we have the pipeline director on, good opportunity to get a kind of an update from him on kind of the infrastructure, whether it be natural gas or crude oil. You know, we just had the hurricanes a little while ago. There was a little bit of a hiccup there. I imagine that's evened out, or maybe not. I don't know. But give us an update from the infrastructure side.
All right. So the infrastructure, the breakdown obviously is by commodity type. And so the first product that most people think of with North Dakota is going to be the crude oil. And so over the summer, Dakota Access, beginning of June, went into full commercial service. That has had an immediate impact on the industry and the state. The pricing over the summer months coming into fall was $2 stronger. We now have data to back up that information. And so from an industry perspective, from a state perspective, from a royalty owner perspective, all of those parties now are benefiting by having that system in place. We're continuing to see fewer and fewer barrels being moved by rail car out of the region. Most of North Dakota's crude by rail that it continues to flow is moving towards the Pacific Northwest. There's some refineries there that are still drawn to those Bakken barrels for their operations, and so I do expect that to continue over some of the longer term, that we still will see some of these trains heading particularly to the West Coast. On the natural gas side of the world, the industry is continuing to meet their gas capture targets, but longer term, when we look at the growth going forward, we're still going to need additional processing plants. We're going to need additional pipelines to move that gas, both within the region as well as natural gas liquids pipeline infrastructure being needed in the coming years to continue to move these products to market. So, again, as production moves forward and continues to grow, those midstream processing transportation needs are going to continue to grow as well.
When it comes to the governor, he kind of at the annual meeting for the North Dakota Petroleum Council, his speech was almost more like a challenge, if you will. That's how I looked at it. 2 million barrels a day, zero spills, carbon capture. I think that was one of them, carbon capture, and then something to do with natural gas too. But have you heard of any of these 4 points that the governor was kind of talking about just over the past? It seems like most of the energy things that he spoke at, he kind of bullet points those through. So are you kind of aware of this and just kind of your thoughts on if you are?
Yeah, and so from my world, from the Pipeline Authority, not being a regulatory agency, so I do not get involved at all in the regulatory side of the world. I'm on the business development side. But if the industry in North Dakota, which it's entirely feasible, there are definite forecast models for North Dakota crude oil reaching 2 million and higher barrels per day in the coming decades. There is still a very optimistic outlook for total volumes out of the region. And so I don't think 2 million barrels a day is out of the question in any capacity. It's not difficult to model those type of scenarios of 2 million barrels per day or higher from North Dakota. And so, but from a midstream pipeline and processing world that I work in, that means we're going to need additional infrastructure in place. And so the industry right now is continuing to monitor all of the different metrics, drilling rigs, completions, well performance, so again that they can stay ahead of that growth curve and make sure that the projects are in place that need to be at the right time. So, you know, really right now the industry is again very focused on the growth opportunities going forward.
I kind of I love them. I think they're great. 2 million barrels a day. I agree. I think that's something that's achievable. I don't know what the reality behind zero oil spills is. I think it's a great goal to always go after, whether the reality is there or not. I don't want to be a buzzkill and say I don't know the reality behind that, because zero of anything is very difficult to do. Partnership with coal. That was the other one. Would that involve you in any way? I know it's pipeline, so I don't know if it would just through the rail system or what. Would the kind of the collaborate? I call it the coal collaboration that he speaks about. Are you hearing anything in your world about that?
Yes, absolutely. And even just yesterday, meeting with one of the midstream companies, CO2 was a definite conversation point. Other EOR techniques. This morning at the energy event, they had the lignite folks there as well, focused on how can we connect North Dakota's lignite resources, the CO2 that's produced, with the oil fields of North Dakota. And so the industry is very well aware of the fact that there are definite opportunities to couple and link those two industries. CO2 does work very well as a working fluid for enhanced oil recovery. And so the midstream companies, the pipeline companies, are interested in it for a couple of reasons. First, someone's going to have to deliver that CO2 or ethane or whatever working fluids are going to be used, and pipeline that to the field to get the whole distribution system built out. So we may be looking at an entirely new network of pipelines throughout western North Dakota. Secondly, those working fluids are used to produce more oil and more natural gas. And so if we have more fluids coming to the surface that need to be processed and handled and pipelined and moved to market. So from the midstream industry is very, very interested in some of these opportunities for enhanced oil recovery, CO2 capture and utilization for enhanced oil recovery. So that's going to be an interesting one to keep focused on in the coming years.
Oh, it's going to be incredible. I mean, when you were talking there, I was just thinking, okay, engineers, chemists, truck drivers, union laborists, pipe welders. I'm just all of these different blue collar and white collar jobs with aggressive, great paying salaries. Just that's all that keeps going through my mind, and it's exciting. I mean, I think that people who just do not understand the economic and even intellectual when it comes to the university side of things that the energy industry brings to this state is remarkable. I mean, it's absolutely remarkable. I challenge people, if you haven't seen it firsthand, go out there and just, it'll amaze you. I mean, just kind of final question, Justin Kringsted, North Dakota Pipeline Association. I've asked this to the governor and a few other people too. Has your perception of oil and gas, the industry, changed at all over the past, say, 5 years since, you know, we've experienced this new culture in our state? And do you have any sort of observational opinion on that?
You know, because it's such a day-to-day activity for myself, I know that I'm continually surprised by some of the technology advancements and the techniques that are being used. And we look back at previous work that I've done, that others have done, where we thought we had the tiger by the tail 5 years ago, and understanding, you know, where this play was headed, and we thought we knew all there was to know about the resource and the production levels. And it's always very humbling to see these new techniques come out and realize that, you know, we were really underestimating the potential of the play. And so, you know, going forward, again, that's what keeps this exciting for anyone that follows the industry or works in the industry, is it's never static. Things are continuing to advance almost daily in this industry. So I feel fortunate to be able to work with that industry and stay up to date with everything that's happening.
And that was Justin Kringsted, Director for the North Dakota Pipeline Authority. To listen to this podcast or other podcasts, visit our website, thecrudelife.com. That's thecrudelife.com. And while you're there, be sure to sign up for our weekly Crude Life newsletter. We're also on social media. Check us out on Facebook and Twitter. Of course, all of those links are available at thecrudelife.com. Once again, I'd like to thank our sponsors for supporting the Crude Life Media Network. They keep interviews like this free for you, the listeners. Over the past few months, I've told you about how unbelievable Hatch coaching is. Don't just take my word for it. Listen to what Christy Huber, president of the United Way of Cass Clay, says about Hatch coaching.
I think it's a really exciting time for our young leaders today because leaders like Eric Hatch are changing the face of what it means to lead an organization or what it means to lead a brand. He's changing that. For many years, I think that the gold standard of leadership has been somebody who is very polished and has it all together or seemingly has it all together. And throughout the years, I think that we've now, especially with technology and social media, we are drawn to what's real.
To find out more about Hatch Coaching or to have Eric Hatch speak at your event or company, visit hatchcoaching.com. That's hatchcoaching.com or call 701-212-1572. That's 701-212-1572.
Since 1979, MBI Energy Services has committed to responsibly growing with today's oil and gas industry by providing proven experience, strategic locations, and integrated services. MBI Energy Services is well established, and its innovation in safety and excellent customer service is what truly makes MBI Energy Services the oil field service professionals. MBI Energy Services, the cutting edge in oil field safety solutions. Learn more at MBIEnergyServices.com.
And that's it for this episode of the Crude Life Interview. My name is Jason Spies. Till next time, be happy and remember, sometimes life can just be crude. We'll see you next time, folks.
The music on today's program is written and performed by the Moody River Band. To find out more about the Moody River Band or their music, visit our website, thecrudelife.com, and click on the Musician tab. That's thecrudelife.com, and click on the Musicians tab.
Gonna be